Did you know that it is Asian American Pacific Islanders Heritage Month? Macy's is highlighting some really cool AAPI-owned brands right now, like Carden, Kaja, Amelia George, and Hey Meave. Plus, you can help support college access and student success when you donate online or round up in-store to APIA Scholars. APIA is the nation's leading nonprofit organization devoted to the academic, personal, and professional success of Asian American, Native, Hawaiian, and Pacific Islander students. Shop Asian American and Pacific Islander-owned brands at Macy's.com or in-store.
The best part of spring cleaning is the post-clean clarity you get. It's kind of like when you find out that you've been paying a fortune for wireless, and then Mint Mobile has phone plans for $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan. It's time to switch to Mint Mobile. All plans come with high-speed data, unlimited talk and text, delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone and any Mint Mobile plan and bring your own phone number along with your existing contacts. Ditch overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. My team here, they're on Mint Mobile and they like it.
For a fraction of the cost, Mint Mobile proved to have excellent coverage with no drop calls or unsent texts. Plus, they make it super easy for me to activate my device just by following a few simple steps online. And bam, done.
To get this new customer offer and the new three-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/literally. That's mintmobile.com/literally. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/literally. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
The ice cream scene.
It's all really, really fun. You're just spectacular.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Literally. It's me, Robbie Lowe. Wow. Fred Armisen is here today. And we are starring together in a new show on Netflix. It is currently out. You can log on and see it. It is a comedy, super funny, called Unstable. It's co-created by my son and I, based on our relationship. I play an insane tech founder, and Fred plays my psychiatrist. And he's just amazing on the show, as he is in everything. So here's Fred Armisen from our new show, Unstable, currently on Netflix. Fred, you look like you're dressed like you're climbing Mount Everest. Is it just cold in your studio?
It's just cold in the studio. So I'm at this kind of studio office space, and it's just a little chilly. So I sort of, you know, it was raining outside, and I just felt like not taking off my jacket. I hope that's okay.
No, it's okay with me. But okay. I was concerned that maybe the heating bill didn't get paid. I don't know. You're in Lhasa or some exotic location. I just didn't know. Or it could be Vancouver on a shitty project. I mean, I just don't know.
Isn't it funny that we associate Vancouver with a shitty project?
Oh, please. I mean, it's a wonderful place, but you know.
Yes, a wonderful place, but the projects, like, there's, it's just a lot of production there, and you just sort of end up, we've all ended up there, and it's fine. But
what's the worst location vis-a-vis the project? So here's the scenario for you guys out there. We get a script. It's like, takes place in, I don't know, ancient Rome. And like, yeah, so you're going to, Fred, here's the offer. Here's the money. It's 4 weeks and we're shooting it. It takes place in ancient Rome and we're shooting it in Winnipeg. Do you ever have?
And you're excited for a moment. You're like, whoa. And then you're like, oh, man. Okay. And then you look on a map. Do you ever look on a map and you go, oh, whoa.
I don't know.
That's really far from everything. Winnipeg, great place. I've been there a bunch, but you know, if you're working, you see a side of a city that becomes not as fun because it's not like, you know, fancy dinner time or like, you know, shopping time. It's like this sort of, you're stuck in one part of town.
But also you go, here's my issue with it is I go, what about shooting in, I mean, obviously we've made up the scenario. We've established we love Winnipeg, but what about Winnipeg is makes you want to shoot an ancient Roman movie there? That's the part that drives me crazy.
I know. That's so, especially, and this is even like, this is maybe, I don't want to be partial to California, but you know, it's just that we have so many studios here. And when I moved here, I was like, what happened to like the whole idea that this is where all the studios were, that you can make anything here? Like I'd go to the Universal Studios ride and like, whoa, you could do Europe. It could look like, you know, Germany. It could look like Italy. And all of a sudden we're just somewhere
else. My favorite. I'm shooting a miniseries that takes place in Nevada. Mm-hmm. I'm on the plane. Mm-hmm. Flying over Nevada.
No.
To go to South Africa.
What?
Oh, yeah. How about that?
What? It's driving distance. I would give you a ride to Nevada. That's how close it is.
It's like, well, we could drive to the location or we could take the longest airline flight humanly possible.
Yes.
Let's take the longest airline flight humanly. But on the other side of it, though, I got to go to South Africa, which is one of the most amazing places I've ever been.
I heard it's absolutely beautiful. Yeah, I heard it's great.
Unreal. So like, I guess for every location we go on, we also get to go to places we would never go and have amazing memories.
That's a really great part of it. I will never understand economics because no matter how many times someone will say to me, hey, it's just the budget and this is how we save money. I'm like, you're getting first class tickets for so many people or any kind of flight is not going to be cheap to get Americans over to. How are you saving money? But then
how about this?
I just don't know.
Robert Downey was telling me this, that on Sherlock Holmes, the first one, they shot anything that took place inside in Budapest.
Yeah.
Because it was cheaper to build the sets. But it's just so
insane. It's inside.
It's inside. It can be in a warehouse in Van Nuys.
If they had acting classes or just whatever classes those are, I do wish that maybe they do have this. They had classes about the economics of it all.
Oh, I'll go even further. I wish they had acting classes that even halfway taught you what you were really going to expect, really working on a set.
I bet you I feel like it's probably not taught. And we love our jobs, but there are things that you would never imagine are part of that we experience every day. And it's not a complaint. It's just that, you know, it's really early. It's a lot of waiting and it's some early mornings.
My favorite is always you have a monologue. You're there to do this huge monologue. You prepared. You get there at 5 in the morning, going to makeup, going to hair, you eat. You're like buzzing, you're ready, you're up, even though it's really early because you're pumped, and they go, all right, so we're going to do some setting up and we'll let you know. And you go to then they ice you like a field goal kicker. Mm-hmm. Like an hour goes by, you haven't heard from anybody, and finally somebody knocks on the door and like, we're having some technical stuff, but you know, once you relax, just to have some, and we'll let you know when it's time to rehearse. You go, mm-hmm. Another hour goes by, and then they knock you, and they go, about 10 minutes. Do we need you in about 10 minutes? You go, 10 minutes is actually 20 minutes. And then they take you for the rehearsal. You rehearse. It goes great. Now we're going to light it. And now they're breaking for lunch.
Mm-hmm.
So now you break for lunch. And then you come back. And everybody's slow after lunch. And they're like, all right, 20 minutes. And then they knock on the door. But is it not 20 minutes? It's actually 30 seconds after they've told you.
Yeah.
And then you go. And then you get there. And then there's a guy with a buzzsaw in the next block, mm-hmm. and they want to try to shut that down because it's ruining the sound.
Yeah.
So you go back to your trailer and you wait, and they try, and the guy won't take $500. Mm-hmm. So you got to wait for him to finish doing the buzzsaw. Then they come back to you. And now you go back and you do it again. And now the sun's going down.
Mm-hmm.
And you... Yeah, about 15 minutes to do it. That should be no heat. You know, listen, you only need a couple of takes. You do the first take, you feel good about it. They go, we have a focus issue. Do it again. Do it again. The buzzsaw guy starts again. Anyway, at the end of the day, you get 30. You end up with 30 seconds to do this scene that you've been preparing forever. That happens. I mean,
this is not an exaggeration. Really. Everything you just described, I've experienced it. That is for real. There's also this sort of you think it's up to you, like what your best take was. You're like, oh my God, I killed it. It does not matter. They're like, well, there was this technical thing, like you said, the focus. There's a sound issue. It doesn't matter what you think.
You do one that you think is great, and there's no issues, and the director goes, that's fantastic, amazing. Let's do it again.
Yes,
do it again for what?
Did you ever get into the hole of that second time that you do it? You're like, why are we doing it again? And then there's a new problem.
Yes.
And then you're like, oh, we had it three ago. Now there's a brand new thing that, like, we've invented a new problem.
The one for safety hole, I call it.
Yes.
And by the way, there's no safety anymore. It used to be there would be something with the film that you wouldn't know until the lab got it.
Right.
Now we don't shoot on film. There's no reason for safety. Nothing.
No, you could watch it right away.
You watch it right away. We don't have these problems on Unstable. On Unstable, we by the way, you're so fun in the show. You're hilarious.
Thanks.
Have you seen any of it yet?
I have not seen any of it. I saw the trailer and some of the promotional stuff, but I have not seen it yet. How did it all come out?
It's amazing. It is amazing. And you are so funny in it. I mean, one of my favorite things we put in the, I was like, we have to put this in the trailer where we talk about traveling and we say we want to go to Ibiza, mm-hmm. birthplace of civilization where they invented the DJ.
Right.
It's funny. It's our ice cream scene's really fun.
The ice cream scene.
It's all really, really fun. You're just spectacular.
Oh, I'm so glad. I'm so glad it all came out.
So everybody be sure to go onto Netflix and see Fred just absolutely destroying on Unstable. Did you have a good time doing it?
Yeah, you guys were all great. I had a great time. That was easy. I know things, that's not the, you know, always the reason to do anything, but it was easy in that I got to do, like, you know, fun takes of things. And I really liked watching you guys work. This is what I learned about you, which is kind of, I don't know if I've ever told you this, but, like, you know, you've been doing this a while. Like, you've been doing this for so long. And on set, you're not jaded or like, I just want to go away. You, like, hang out. And you're not doing it as a favor. Like, I guess I'll hang out. You're like, really present. You kind of want to goof around a little bit. You want to talk to everybody. It was great to see you. It makes the whole set very it just relaxes everything, and then all of a sudden it's like a light, fun experience.
I love hearing that. I always find that comedy, it's such a different vibe than my other show, 911 Lone Star, because that's a drama. It's big. There's spectacle. And Unstable is just like, how what's the funniest we can possibly be? Like, and that, I think, lends itself to just hanging out and spitballing and being a goof with people. Like, my favorite thing ever was where I'm hugging you as you're leaving the basement, and I'm telling you what movies you should watch. And the fact that there is a joke about August Osage County makes me laugh so hard. There's no show in the world that's going to make a joke about August Osage County, no. But this one.
Like, how much do we say those words? How much do we ever put those words together?
No.
Oh, that's fantastic. Oh, I'm so glad.
I also like the scene. There's a scene where you try to take John Owens, what is he eating?
Granola?
Yeah, it's so Amazing. And how about little John Owen, my boy? I thought he's so good in it. I didn't, you know, you don't know as a father when you're working with somebody and you have so much invested in it, you're like kind of blinded. But once you see it cut together, it's irrefutable. It's going to be what there's going to be no denying what it is. You're going to be, oh, that's awful, or oh, that's great. And yeah. He's so good in it.
Yeah, I remember working with him too. Like he, the look on his face is very sweet and earnest. He's got this kind of, which I really like. Like it really like propels things along. Also, he was great. What a great guy. And I'm glad it worked out that way, because I when I've talked to you about like your family life, you're also not like everyone's got to get into showbiz. That's not your deal. No. Like I would say the opposite. So this way it felt like the work was stood for itself. It spoke for itself. It was just like there, you know, he was there for the work. And I really like that too.
It's such a fun set. It felt like camp to me.
Yeah.
I mean, it really felt like camp. Fred in the show plays the psychiatrist who tries to blackmail me, and we put him and then I lock him in the basement of my mansion, and then he doesn't want to leave because it's too fun to live in the mansion.
And then I stay. I want to stay.
And we're friends who can't quit each other.
Yeah, that's pretty great.
When we can't quit each other, it's very Brokeback Mountain.
Yeah.
It's very.
Yeah.
I can't quit you.
No.
how about the. I'm realizing all my funny references about you have to do with food.
Oh.
Kettle corn is a great moment.
Yes.
I found kettle corn.
Yeah.
Variety pack.
Yeah. I don't know what takes they use, but I think, yeah, we use variety pack and there were a couple other whatever flavors.
Variety pack is in.
Yeah. Okay, great.
If you're thinking about doing some home remodeling, check out Window World. Go to windowworld.com and check out their Windows Inspiration Guide. The guide is a dream book of page after page of beautiful windows. It's not just about how good they look. These beauties earned the Good Housekeeping Seal and Energy Star certification. Go to windowworld.com to schedule your free consultation. Tell them you heard about it here on Literally with me, Rob Lowe. Window World, America's exterior remodeler.
Well, you know, no two travelers are exactly alike, and that means no two trips should be either. Texas, vast landscape of cultures, regions, destinations, and activity allow for such an infinite number of different travel experiences. I mean, I love Texas. I go like this. The people of Dallas, the culture of Austin, and I love any time I get there. If you're a beach person, well, you can go have fun in the sun with Texas 350 miles of coastline. If you're a rugged vacation type, there's campgrounds, hiking trails, state parks, golf is nuts there, foodies, you got your Texas barbecue and live music in Austin. And of course, if you're into the cowboy scene, you can certainly find it there. And now, Travel Texas offers a one-of-a-kind online trip builder that allows users to generate a custom trip matched to their own unique interests. So visit traveltexas.com/getyourown to get the only trip to Texas that matters, yours. That's traveltexas.com/getyourown. Hey, listeners. Ever have trouble getting someone on the phone when you have a question about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day, or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card. You know, it's fun also about the show, and I think we really delivered on, you know, comedies are very much of their time. And every once in a while, there'll be a quote-unquote timeless comedy, but they're really rare. Like, Look, I love the screwball comedies as much as anybody, but when you watch those screwball comedies, Howard Hawks and everything get crushed, it's like, you don't really, they're of their time. You know, comedy is like it's sort of a young person's vibe, and it has to be commenting or relevant to the times. And we're living in a time, for whatever reason, where comedy isn't really laugh out loud. It isn't. We went through the irony period of David Letterman.
Yeah.
Right? Remember irony comedy?
Yeah.
Everything was ironic and eye-rolly and Janine Garofalo and, you know, all that, like, the stuff. And now we're in a thing where it's like, is White Lotus a comedy? Really? Is it? is Nurse Jackie, I mean, it's been off the air for a while, but Edie Falco won for Best Comic Actor, won every award.
Yeah, it just...
Is Succession really a comedy? Succession?
Yeah,
there's... I love Succession. It's my favorite show on TV. But, like, it's not 30 Rock. It's not The Office.
Yeah.
It's not Parks and Rec. And Unstable is. It's comedy in that vein. And there's not a lot of it out there.
Yeah. It definitely had, like, the rhythm of it all was, like, pure jokes.
Pure jokes. Through.
Yeah. Yeah.
But also, there's also a school of comedy where it's set up joke, punchline, that's very sitcom-y.
Yeah.
And that's not really my jam. I know it can be very popular.
Yeah.
But it's not that either. It literally is, it's like Veep. Veep's a laugh out loud comedy.
Yeah. In that zone.
And I would say Arrested Development is another one.
Sure.
Like those are the shows that influenced Unstable. If you like those shows, you're going to love Unstable.
30 Rock was a real – that when that ended, I feel like nothing really replaced that. How
no.
Just like – it was like a machine gun of jokes.
Did you ever do a 30 Rock?
Yes.
What did you play?
I played a neighbor who Liz or Tina's character thought was a terrorist.
Amazing.
And so this character is like –
Of course. Oh, of course. Yes. Yeah, it's famous. It's amazing.
Like, you know, training in the park and like going on, you know, like just doing a lot of stuff like sort of on the ground. And she's like, that's a terrorist. And what he was training for was The Amazing Race.
No, it's I remember now. I can remember a knock on the door and you kind of barely open the door and stick your head out.
Yeah, yeah. What? Yeah.
That's amazing.
She comes up with great stuff.
30 Rock it's my favorite comedy of all time, probably.
Really?
I think. What else?
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm not.
By the way, and I'm not saying this just to be whatever, but Portlandia is one of them too.
Oh, thanks. Thank you.
For sure.
I mean, there's just so many. Because, I mean, if you want to go back, I mean, I'd go back to like SCTV and all that stuff. And
well, those are sketch. Those
that's
are
sketch.
Sketch.
Okay.
There's sketch shows, right?
Yeah.
And I guess Portlandia is kind of a sketch show.
Yeah, it was a weird sketch.
Abstract. What was your favorite character to play on Portlandia?
I did this character with Carrie where we were sort of these goths. Amazing. And we called them the weirdos. They had sort of long black hair and like white face paint and like dark circles around our eyes. Just kind of really exaggerated goths. But we were kind of normal. We would just go to, you know, Target and stuff and or go to the beach. And that felt very – I just really love those characters. And I felt like I was in a cartoon or something.
It's fun to be in a living cartoon.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of that Unstable. My character's a little bit like a cartoon. I like when you're the women that run the
– Oh, the feminist bookstore. Yeah.
The feminist bookstore.
Yeah. That was like based on a real place there. And those are pretty improvised. It was just us in those costumes making stuff up because it's easy because we were sort of behind a sort of counter or a register so we could just go off and talk about whatever was around us, you know?
That's so amazing. Tell me about, so we talked last time you were on the podcast a little about Documentary Now and what's the status of that season?
That's out on AMC Plus and IFC is part of that. You know how like all those companies kind of turn into one thing.
Yeah.
And loved it. It's one of my favorite things to do. You know, we shot it all in England and it came out just the way we wanted it. One of them took place in Wales. We shot it in Wales. That's a place. That was one where we shot at the locations we we're sort of pretending to be at.
It wasn't like, hey, this whole thing takes place in Wales, but we're shooting it in Salt Lake City.
No, no. this was Wales for Wales.
That was
like a sports documentary where there was a sport where people just throw rocks at each other. And then we did another one in Blackpool about a hairdresser, and Kate Blanchett was in that one.
Oh my God.
So I'm name dropping. I dropped that name.
No, you're not name dropping. Listen, I'm a big believer in the Ty Cobb quote, which is, it ain't bragging if you done it.
Great.
How was she? What was it like to work with Kate Blanchett?
She like really, you know, she brings her own like prosthetic teeth and like, you know, wigs and stuff.
Wow.
So she really gets into it. And she did the accent. There's like a Blackpool accent. Blackpool's this city in England. It's a little bit like our Atlantic City or Reno.
Mm-hmm.
And man, she really gets into it.
Have you seen her? Have you seen Tar?
Yeah, she's incredible.
Todd Field, who wrote and directed it, is a great old friend. And he only makes like one movie every 18 years since his last movie. I mean, so it's always, can you imagine? He hasn't made a movie since 18 years. And then he made Tar because he has great taste and he doesn't want to just do anything. And he writes and directs his own stuff. And, you know,
How does he sustain himself? I mean, that's kind of.
He has a commercial business.
Ah.
He directs. So he, you know, it's a great, it's like Ridley Scott. Those guys, yeah. I mean, there's so many great directors who go out there and direct commercials and you never know. And that's what they do. And usually they're great commercials.
That's great. What a great, you know, I guess
right?
I call it side job, but it's like it's like a main thing that kind of fuels the rest of your interests, you know.
What's like the old, it's been attributed to so many different actors, the equation of I do one for me and two for them.
Oh, nice.
Right? Which is meaning you do a passion project and then you do maybe one to – big broad comedy to pay the bills or whatever. And then you get that finances and lets you go do the things that you think are really special.
Do you think you have that in your life or in your work? You don't have to give anything away.
No.
Is there an element of that in your life?
I definitely know that it's important. And I was just on this big trip. I was able to go, to Egypt, Jordan, Israel. I just got back yesterday. I mean, just in terms of what you're asking me, what's interesting is you don't get people coming up to you in Jordan who they don't speak English. They're literally people living like Bedouins, but they've, somehow seen something I've done, recognized in the weirdest places. And that's from the ones that, that are more audience centric. You know, that's why you do 911 Lone Star. It travels all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's exciting. And then, they're not recognizing me from like, behind the candelabra. which is one you do for a totally different reason. And I do think you have to do both. I really do. And I don't put one above the other. Because they're accomplishing different things.
Yeah. But it's funny though, something like Behind the Candelabra, it does feel like that's at the forefront of your mind. You're like, no, this is my main thing. There's something about it that there's like an assumption. You're like, oh my God, this is going to be it.
They're definitely, what it's like. I mean, because you specialize in this is like where you have a part where you just know you're going to destroy, and it may not even be the lead part. I mean, Michael Douglas and Jesus, why am I? I'm getting so old. I just had a birthday.
Happy birthday!
So, thank you. So I can't think of Matt Damon's name.
I've done it so much. I've done it with bands that I love, where I'm like, what? Their name.
And I always see them. Why is it that you still see them in your mind's eye perfectly clearly?
Yes.
You think you wouldn't also You also wouldn't know any. If you can't remember the name, you shouldn't remember anything about them.
Absolutely.
But yet you see their face right there. You're like, I see Matt Damon. He's in his rugby outfit from that, you know, Morgan Freeman movie. He plays a rugby player. Or he's dressed in his Martian suit. I mean, he's Matt Damon. But I can't think of his name.
Wait, I have one right this very minute because my mind went to this. You mentioned Ty Cobb.
Yes.
Who's the actor who did the
Ty Cobb? Is it Ray Liotta?
Nope.
Is it? Who played Ty Cobb?
From I'm just exposing myself as
now you can't even remember his credits.
I'm trying to remember his credits, so
wait,
I'm going to go to
Ty Cobb. Was that in Eight Men Out?
Tommy Lee Jones. Oh, look, they wrote Tommy Lee.
They wrote it. I try to be so smart. That was Elliot. How the hell do you know Tommy Lee Jones in Eight Men Out? I don't understand.
I fully, you're like Matt Damon, and all of a sudden I was like, oh, do I know? And now I know it's Tommy Lee Jones. But yeah, my brain fully does that.
Tommy Lee Jones is perfect for Ty Cobb, actually.
Yeah, really.
Like just kind of. Rah, 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 rah.
You must know him. You know everybody.
Yeah. San Ysidro Ranch is a big sort of fancy place here in Santa Barbara. And really fancy, fancy, fancy. And I was there about, I don't know, 6-7 years ago. And I look over and there's Tommy Lee Jones. And I'm looking at him and he's just looking at me like Tommy Lee Jones, right? Just giving me, you know, the Tommy Lee Jones stare. And, you know, we're talking on. I keep looking at him. He keeps looking at me. We keep catching each other's eye. We capture each other's eye. And like about the seventh time I capture his eye, he literally goes, "Fuck you!" across the restaurant.
Meaning what?
And I look at him and he goes, "Fuck you!" across the restaurant. He was just messing with me. He was just being just... He is unbelievable. He is a badass, a real badass.
Where's he from? Actor. Is he from?
You know, the thing about Tommy Lee Jones, he went to Yale and was, this is a famous story, but went to Yale and he's Al Gore's roommate.
Right. Yeah.
He's a Rhodes Scholar. But I say to Tommy Lee Jones,
fuck you. One time I was in Santa Monica. And I went to breakfast at a diner. I like going to breakfast at diners, right?
Yeah, me too.
Scrambled eggs, toast. And it's also
– I had scrambled eggs this morning. Scrambled eggs, bacon. I'm sorry. I could eat it every morning.
So nice. Like it's salty and nice. And also like there's something nondescript about diners. And God, I hope this is an okay story. Then
it couldn't be worse than fuck you.
No, or better than – I mean that's pretty great. Be funny if it was exactly the same story. And you're like, no,
diner.
I just
Tommy
told you
Lee
that.
Jones was there and he was like,
fuck you. But I saw Dick Van Dyke. Dick Van Dyke just walked in and he sat at the counter and I was amazed. Like, oh whoa, God. That's totally him. And he was being friendly with everybody and really sort of chatting with everyone, politely eating. And he was happy to be there. Very cheerful.
Mm-hmm.
Then I tried to make eye contact with him, sort of like, you know, I had already been on Saturday Night Live and it was a little bit of like, yeah, I hope he notices that I'm this comedian.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, he did. We started sort of making eye contact and nodding at each other. And he came up to me and, you know, sort of acknowledged, hi, how are you? And then his first line of business was, do you know who Brody Stevens is? Brody Stevens, do you know that comedian? He's a comedian like in a sort of, I want to say in the alternative. No, he was a touring comedian. He passed mm-hmm. away recently, but that's who he wanted to talk about was this other comedian. And that I really loved that he took this moment to talk about somebody else because he really loved Brody Stevens.
That's obscure enough that it's amazing that he would be hip to Brody Stevens.
Yes. And right? To want to talk to me about it.
Yeah.
But God, he was great. It was great to see him. That's my story.
I got a good Lauren story.
Okay, let's hear it.
Anybody who's a longtime listener knows that I love me a good Lauren Michaels story. You know, the thing about comedy is it's a young man's game. At a certain point when Dick Van Dyke would enter and fall over the ottoman, you worried for his health. It's really true. I need to talk to you about the Californians, my all-time. What are you doing here?
Oh, my Rob God. Took the 405. I guess, wait, you went up to, if you went up to Santa Barbara, I guess you took the one.
You took the one and then you went over to Las Posas. Or maybe if you're smart, you waited to Rice. And then to the 101. It's just the best. It's my favorite. It's one of my all-time favorite sketches ever. But it's true. It's, people in California are obsessed with giving directions on how to get places.
Well, it's just – it's always been my experience here. And I'm always giving directions and sort of bragging about like what route I took somewhere. So it just came from that. It was like a bit that we would do at the read-through table because we would have all just have been in L.A. So I'd say to Bill Hader – oh, I was just in LA. And they would sort of start joking. I remember Keenan would chime in too. We'd just joke about – I remember always saying – or Bill would always say the word Barham. I took Barham over to
– Sepulveda.
Sepulveda. And so it just came from that and a little bit also from Dana Carvey, who I was not on the cast with. I was speaking to him separately. He did an impression of his son. And – his son, he's like, I can't get mad at my son. His son got pulled over or something. And he's like, so where Dana was supposed to be like mad at him, he's like, no, but dad, no, but dad. So he did this face. So the impression is a little bit of Dana Carvey's son too. I'm sorry, like Dana Carvey doing an impression of his son.
I also like the sort of smash cuts where you guys are like shocked when somebody says something.
Yeah. It's a little zoom-ins. That's like the sort of soap opera element to it.
And you have to, quote unquote, find your camera, right? Like you have to know what camera is going to be your close-up.
That's what most of the rehearsals were. Like, okay, that one's mine. Maybe like three out there. And that one I wrote with this writer, James Anderson. And this is just like typical like writer stuff where like I only had the idea of doing directions. And he was the one who was like, no, it should be a soap opera. And then
– see, that's how the sausage is made at SNL is, and that's what people don't really realize. Anytime I've done something, I go back in the day, I go, I do a really good Arsenio Hall. Talk about how long ago that was. And they're like, okay. And then they make it something else. Or I do a Stone Phillips and like, you should be doing bumpers for the show, not the actual show. You have the directions and they're so good at fleshing out what might be just otherwise sort of a one note idea.
That would go nowhere, but it's some, you know, it takes someone else to sort of give it the right framing. So
it's really true. You know, the only thing I ever let interrupt my podcast, my dog. Take a minute now, please. Pet your dog while you learn about Bark, the company dedicated to making dogs happy. Every month, BarkBox designs and delivers a whole new collection of toys and treats just for your best bud. Every toy is tailored to your pup's size and play style. From squeaky plush toys from BarkBox to ultra-tough, durable ones from Super Chewer. Every treat is made with yummy, healthy, all-natural ingredients like pumpkin and sweet potato. Each box is inspired by a new theme and comes with fun surprises for you and your dog. For a limited time, they'll double your first box of goodies for free. I love making my dogs happy. Love it. It's my favorite thing in the world. And my dogs are obsessed with their chewable toys. BarkBox offers treats, keep my dogs healthy, and amazing new toys that keep my dogs entertained. To get your free upgrade, go to BarkBox.com/Rob. Transform your bathroom cleaning with Wet and Forget weekly shower cleaner. You just spray today and rinse tomorrow for a no-scrub clean. With over 33,000 five-star reviews, this is your once-a-week solution to keeping your tub and shower surfaces sparkling clean. Available at Amazon, Lowe's, Menards, Home Depot, and Ace Hardware. Join thousands who've switched to an easier clean. Get your Wet and Forget weekly shower cleaner today and make your bathroom sparkle with zero scrubbing. So I came home to a little gift in my bathroom the other day from our friends at Harry's. To get what you want, you have to challenge the status quo and blaze your own trail. You know who challenged the status quo? Harry's. They saw customers getting ripped off by questionable products in the shaving industry and decided they had something better to offer. So instead of charging the same old ridiculous prices, Harry's found a way to make their beautifully designed razors, and they are beautiful, for a fraction of the price of the other big brands. Exceptional products, honest prices. That's Harry's. They have the highest customer satisfaction in shaving history and a no-risk trial. Don't like your shave? No worries. It's on them. Convenient subscription options that you can cancel at any time. And Harry's also has other self-care products that meet the same quality standards as their razors. Richly lathering, skin-softening body wash in scents like Redwood, Wildland, and Stone. And an extra high-quality, amazing-smelling deodorant for just $5. I love their stuff. I'm so impressed by Harry's products. All of it. It's all good. Don't settle for the status quo. Blaze your own trail with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/rob. That's harrys.com/rob for a $3 trial set. What are you working on now? Where am I finding you? What's the latest
in
your
LA.
Universe, in the Fred Armisen universe? Everybody has to have a universe today. And then,
yeah. I feel like I'm working on three different things all in the writing stage. And it's all of that is like the perfect place to be. Like, I like that things are sort of coming together, and we're going out to pitch some stuff like soon. I don't know, next month or something. So it's like I feel like I'm working on many different things at the same time.
Do you write with people or by yourself or both?
No, with people.
Always.
I'll start by myself. I'll come up with some idea. And then I can only get one episode done. It's the weirdest thing where I only like thinking of a pilot episode or what the first episode. And I never want to do the rest. I'm like, this is how it starts. I don't have the ability to like, then what happens? And then the character goes through this. I'm like, I always want someone else to come up with that. I just like the initial concept. And then for someone else to like take it somewhere else. And it's turned out for the best that way, because then people think of things that it never would have occurred to me.
I think also comedy is just, it would be hard to do alone. I mean, making each other laugh in the room or wherever you're writing is half the battle, don't you think?
Totally. Otherwise, you're just like making yourself laugh kind of. And so, I just like doing one episode and then bringing someone else in, and that's great. And then a lot of music stuff. You know, I go and play drums on Late Night with Seth Meyers. And I've been doing this other weird thing lately where I've been going to record stores with a guitar. I mean, I book it. And then I do covers. I just go and play covers.
That's amazing. What kind of covers?
Well, I did not set up my camera this way for this podcast, but those are the covers right there. I just made a list.
Can you go get the board and bring
like,
it to me?
They're just like punk rock classics. Let's see.
Punk rock's the genre. He's taking his headphones off. He can't hear me.
But
here comes the board.
I don't have my headphones in, so I hope you're still there. But the thing
police
is
on,
like,
oh, Police on My Back. Amazing.
Yeah, that's the Clash.
I love that song.
Originally written by Eddie Grant. Never Talk to You Again. Husker Du. Can't Make It on Time, The Ramones, Gangsters by The Specials, I Could Be Happy by Altered Images. It's just like songs that I like, and it just makes me feel good to like come home after that. It's like the act of playing a guitar. These aren't songs that I wrote like, oh, look how talented I am. And, you know, none of that. It's all like, it's like the people who show up, it's almost like reminiscing together.
Is it a surprise thing or is it?
No. I book it. They announce it.
Are you going to be in LA anytime?
I usually do it at this place called the Permanent Records, which is right near this office. So it's like a way to keep music in my life. And also like, I love going on tour, but it's nice to be home to go out and do like shows around here.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I gotta come see that. That would be amazing. Please. What kind of guitar? Do you play acoustic or are you plugged
electric?
In?
Electric. And then I'll have like a loop pedal where I could do a little drum part. So I'll just play like a little drum part and it'll go underneath it. And then just keep it simple.
Have you ever seen any of the celebrity bands like Kevin Costner band or the?
No. And Kevin Bacon, I think he's got.
The Bacon Brothers.
Yeah.
You know who else has a band, I think, is. Again, I can see it. Here
Modern
it is.
West.
I'm looking at his face in my mind, and I'm not thinking Dennis Quaid.
Oh, Dennis Quaid. Okay.
I think Dennis Quaid has. Modern West is Kevin Costner's band. Good name, Modern West.
And then, there's one more we're missing.
Do you remember? Well, I don't know. I grew up in Ohio, and there was the Ohio State Fair. That was always a big thing. The state fairs are still a really huge thing. And you would always see like that would be the bullseye. It's like Kevin Costner at the Ohio State Fair.
It's just, it must be fun for them to get to go play. And there's like, almost like, also there's no expectations really. Like that's the fun of it.
Right.
Is it's just for entertainment. It's not like we have to have a hit record. It's like just to play for fun.
Not that they're doing it for money, but that's, as you know, the touring is, that's where it's all at. Everybody's touring now.
The musicians I've spoken to have said it's really hard out there. As far as like trying to make a profit. Oh my God, I'm talking about money so much. I turned this into a money podcast.
It is. We could money and food because it started out food.
Yeah.
Now it's into all the things that are important. Money and food.
Financial advice. We should just get financial advice.
You go to your bank and pull it up.
Fuck you.
with the middle finger up.
Come on.
In the middle of.
Fuck you. That's powerful.
In the middle of like a blue blood restaurant.
Yeah. That's good. That's impressive.
I mean, you gotta give it up to him.
Yeah.
Tell me about History of the World Part 2.
That is this show that Nick Kroll worked on, like, or he's one of the producers on. And that's just like every comedian, you know, in that scene.
Right.
Whatever. Like, LA comedy scene is in it, and it's just a goofy thing where I play an alien in Egyptian times who is like selling pyramids.
Amazing.
But it's a real pyramid scheme, like a literal pyramid scheme. So it's like you can make a pyramid, but what you do is you sell those materials for other people to make pyramids, and then you sell them the materials. So you make the money from the pyramid.
It's a great concept.
That is a great concept.
I was literally at the pyramids this week. This week, at the pyramids.
How close do you get to be to them?
I was lucky enough to go with my friend Peter Guber, who owns the Golden State Warriors, and very accomplished man, world traveler, and he puts these incredible trips together. And he was able to have them shut down the entire complex. So it was just us at the pyramids and the Sphinx with the leading Egyptologist in the planet.
What?
Yeah. I mean,
But what do you mean was able to? What does that take? Planning,
and I think it takes a substantial donation to the Egyptologist, you know. And they do it for people. I mean, you'll see a photo of Will Smith there, or President Clinton. So they definitely do it, but it's very, very, very rare. Like, to be next to the Sphinx and walk around it and touch it. And usually you can't, like, you know, if you just go there, you can't get anywhere really near it. And it's the Egyptologist, by the way, was not having any of the ancient alien stuff. Cause I tried. I was like, I brought it up and he was not happy. He was there. Can I tell you, they are not down to clown with the ancient alien stuff.
No.
At all.
He's like, you think I studied this much for you to make it turn this into a joke?
I'm like, it's not a joke. I mean, what if it's actually an energy source and that the obelisks are part of the energy source? And
he shut it down fast.
No, he's like, I discovered the village last year with the papyrus that talks about I had this many people working for me.
Wow.
I had this many calves we slaughtered. So people built it. I'm like, well, what? But did they though, or did they just refurbish it? From when?
And he's like, "I'll answer your question. No, they did it. They made it." Now, what was your like? What from looking at photos, what seeing it live or seeing it in person,
yeah,
what didn't you realize?
It is one of those places, if you ever are blessed enough to go there, nothing can prepare you for it.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. Now, granted, I like history, so I'm predisposed to loving something like that. But you go there and it blows your mind. The scale, how old it is. And what you realize is that what they were doing, the ancient Egyptians, and on such a scale, level of sophistication and scope everywhere. And it's basically lost to the sands of time. Mm-hmm. that could happen to us in 2 seconds. Like we kind of think that we're the top dog and we're on top of everything and we're this. It could happen to us just as easily. If it happened to them, then that's what you get when you go there.
Wow.
You know what I mean? That's what I come away with.
I wonder what people learned about history, Egyptian history, in say 1600. Mm-hmm. So this was buried. What did people know about Egypt before they've discovered anything like this? Like,
what would you? That's exactly the issue. Here's the thing that blows my mind. Cleopatra lived closer to the invention of the iPhone than she did to the building of the pyramids.
How is that possible?
That's the math. That's how old the pyramids are.
So if we met Cleopatra, we'd be like, "Hey, you know, you're so great. What's it like being from the time of the pyramids?" She would be like, "I'm not from then."
She's like, the pyramids.
That's from way before.
That's like way before. That's ancient history.
Don't pin me. Don't connect me to that.
I got to take a selfie with Tutankhamun, his body, his head.
What?
They just unwrapped him. They just unwrapped his mummy last year. But if you go on my Instagram, you can see a selfie I took with Tutankhamun.
Oh, I got to see it. I was going to ask you what he looks like.
His head is very small. It was unbelievable. But I want to see you playing in Egypt. Did you have were you dressed like King Tut?
Oh, no. They really, like, because it's this kind of, I'll even call it a sketch show, they made it really, like, goofy looking. Meaning, I look like someone dressed up as an alien, dressed up as an Egyptian.
That sounds delicious.
So it's like an alien face, but, like, with Egyptian stuff on. So
this sounds delicious to me.
It was dumb and fun.
Dumb and fun. Yeah. And that brings me back to unstable. It's both smart and dumb at the same time.
That's the sweet spot. That's the place to be. I got to say, like, you, because of Parks and Rec, maybe even going back to Hotel New Hampshire, but like, I feel like basically you're in that comedy world anyway. So getting to do those scenes with you, I just felt like a link to all the comedy stuff you've done.
I love that. That's a huge compliment coming from you. I mean, my comedy idols, you're definitely one of them. And I thought we had so much fun. And if we get to do a season two, we've thought of some really fun stuff. I hope you'll come back.
Absolutely.
I'm half tempted to tell you what the opening of season two is. And it is amazing for you and I.
Great.
Amazing.
Great. I'm in a second.
Well, hopefully everybody out there is watching on Netflix. It's out now, Unstable. And the more you watch it, the more likely Fred and I get to work together again. So
that's right.
You got to download it. You got to watch the whole. Here's the other thing. One thing, I'll finish with this. I really wanted the show to be fast. I wanted it to fly. And it does. You can watch the entire season of Unstable in less time than it took you on Netflix to watch The Irishman. That's a good use of your time.
That's good use of time.
That might be the ad.
Did you, were you, I mean, technically you can edit, but were you, did you
I did.
Chime
yes.
in?
Oh, I more than chimed in. Great. I was in there all the way through in the editing. I mean, it was it's my son, myself, and Victor Fresco. So there's a negotiation that goes on. I didn't win every battle, but I won a lot of them. And I definitely exerted a lot of will on the editing because I'm a big believer that it should fly. Comedy should fly. Yeah. I didn't, you know, there was a lot of discussion about like letting a joke land and all that stuff. And I don't believe in that.
I'm with you. Everyone's busy. Everyone's just like, lingering on something.
No, no lingering, no loitering, lingering.
No lingering, no loitering. No. That should be a sign in editors' rooms. No loitering. Meaning you don't have to like sit and with the joke and think about it. And
we had a big discussion about that. And happily at the end of the day, I won that discussion because I think it might be a generational thing. I don't know. But all of my favorite comedies are like, you almost can't laugh because it's coming at you so fast.
Yeah. And you don't miss it. It's the stuff you cut out, you don't miss.
No, for sure. Well, this has been great. Hopefully we'll be seeing each other again this summer to have some more fun.
I hope so too.
On Unstable.
It's always great to see you. This is a good excuse for us to get to talk and hang out.
I know, for sure. You can't fret. He's undeniable. What are you going to do? Super fun always to see Fred. Don't forget, you can catch him at Permanent Records Roadhouse, playing his tunes, doing his thing. Police on My Back. That's the one I want to hear. Again, if you had any fun, listen to us. Don't forget, Netflix. Unstable, currently streaming. He's super funny. I guarantee it. Ring, ring. What's that? Ooh, it's the lowdown line.
Hello, you've reached literally in our lowdown line where you can get the lowdown on all things about me, Rob Lowe. 323-570-4551. So have at it. Here's the beep.
Hi, Rob. This is Anne from South Bend, Indiana. I've heard people in show business say you should never work with children or animals, but between Doggone and Holiday in the Wild, it seems like you're running towards projects where you get to work with animals in gorgeous locations. So I'm wondering, what were those experiences like, and how was it working with those animals, and how does it make you feel about working with animals again in the future? Love the podcast. Thanks for taking my question.
Oh, thank you so much. It is true that working with kids and animals is technically difficult. Forget the fact that you're likely to be upstaged. Because let's face it, if a little cute kid brings their A game, or a cute dog brings their A game, there's no actor that's good enough to stand up to that. I don't care if you're Daniel Day-Lewis. I'm sorry. People love a good dog and they love a cute kid. You're just screwed. You're going to be second fiddle. My ego can take it. I'm capable of being second fiddle. The real reason also, though, is technically kids can only work a certain amount of time. So it's a very complicated scheduling, makes the days longer. And animals, you know, they're animals. They're not actors. So in Doggone, the dog had to jump through a screen door. He'd been training for months to do it. And he wouldn't do it. Just wouldn't do it. Didn't want to do it. And so then you have to refigure out the sequence. So there's always going to be something when you're working with an animal. But that said, I do like movies that have kids and animals in them because they're touchstones. Animals and kids are things that we love. And if you're doing a movie with that, then you're likely dealing with a theme that's going to be important to people and that people are going to relate to. And I know I relate to a really good dog movie. So very, very happy. So thank you all who made Doggone number one movie on Netflix. And thank you for the question. Anyway, I'll see you next week. I'll be happy to be back with more fun and games here on Literally. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Literally with Rob Lowe, produced by me, Rob Schulte, with help from associate producer Sarah Bagar. Our research is done by Alyssa Grahl. The podcast is executive produced by Rob Lowe for Low Profile, Adam Sachs, Jeff Ross, and Joanna Solitaroff at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson at Stitcher. All of the music on this podcast was composed by Devin Bryant. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Literally with Rob Lowe.
has been a Team Coco production in association with Stitcher.
I love fast cars, but there aren't a ton of high-performance EVs. They're certainly out here, there. But when I get a chance to get behind the wheel of one, I love it. And I was blown away by the Kia EV6 GT. When you get behind the wheel of the Kia, it is literally like being in a state-of-the-art rocket ship, but also comfortable. The thing goes from 0 to 60 in 3.4 seconds. It is the premium driving experience. And of course, it's an EV. So the climate thanks you. SiriusXM provides access to over 165 channels in the vehicle. Music, sports, news, comedy, yacht rock. Let's go. Little Steely Dan going in your Kia. Come on now. So check it out today. It is the all-electric Kia EV6 GT. I had a blast checking it out. Believe me, you should do it yourself via kia.com/EV6 to learn more. That is kia.com/EV6. Kia, movement that inspires.